It is my honor to call upon our beloved member, dear friend, Bible scholar, Dr. Lynn Heller.
Some of you may be wondering why I'm walking with a cane. I now understand why Yaakov Avinu was an angry old man. Because in the middle of the night, as he was returning to the land of Canaan, he was attacked by a mysterious stranger, and he suffered an injury to his hip. And unfortunately, he didn't have Dr. Mattingly to correct that. I had double hip replacement, so that's why I'm carrying the cane, but I'm here to talk about it. Secondly, as some of you may know, my late husband, Rabbi Zachary Heller, was a conservative rabbi and served in a congregation for close to 40 years. And the congregants always used to kid him, and he was a master preacher, and the congregants used to kid him and say, "We know that Lynn wrote the sermon because she's an English major. Don't kill it in the delivery." So, ladies and gentlemen, I wrote the sermon this morning, and I sure hope that I'm not going to kill it in the delivery. So if you'd like to follow along, I'm going to be focusing on chapter 48 in Genesis, in our parsha, where Jacob blesses his grandsons. My topic this morning is God's afikoman, hidden messages in Vayechi. So we're about to enter the world of the Bible and read an ancient text. And I always cautioned my students to exercise what the poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who was a 19th century romantic poet, what he called the willing suspension of disbelief for the moment. The willing suspension of disbelief for the moment. The text deals with the intermarriage of Joseph in the context of ancient Israelite family, the power of a grandfather and nation building. Please do not read this text through your 21st century lens of intermarriage and inclusion, because you're not going to find it there. Please enter the ancient text with me, waiting to be found, and waiting to be found is what I call God's afikoman, that little treasured gift of meaning that's hidden there in the text for you to discover. And the best thing is, you don't have to clean for Pesach. Okay, if I were to ask you, what's the Parshat Vayechi about? The reader would naturally assume that the text is about life, living, because it's Vayechi. But it's not so. The Parsha begins with Vayechi, and Jacob lived, but it ends with his death and burial. And if it recounts the death of Jacob, why is it called Vayechi? And he lived. Does Jacob live on after his death? And if so, by what means? Professor John, not used to using the mic. Is that better? Is this okay? Okay. So Professor John Levinson, who lives here in Newton, the renowned Bible scholar, maintains that the structural theme of Bereshit is the founding of the family. But at every turn, violence and jealousy threaten the very foundation stone of the family here in Bereshit. Bereshit begins with the incipient sibling rivalry of brothers, and the contest for blessing can be bloody and end in fratricide. Cain murders Abel. Esau vows that he's going to kill his brother Jacob, who has wrested the blessing of the firstborn from him. And the overriding emphasis on primogeniture, that the blessing is accorded to the firstborn child, the firstborn son, is continually challenged. In our parsha, we find the resolution of all these conflicts which have been coursing through Bereshit. Let me set the scene for you and provide background for Jacob's final dramatic encounter with Joseph in Egypt. At the beginning of Parshat Miketz, which we read several weeks ago, there's a famine ravaging the land of Canaan. And so Jacob sends his sons down to Egypt to get provisions for the family. And the verse in Hebrew says, Yesh Shever b'Mitzrayim. Shever in Hebrew means provisions, food. But if you read that word Shever in the biblical text, it can mean something broken, that Jacob, through his prophetic powers, understood that there's a piece broken off from the family, and it's Joseph, and he's in Egypt, and I am intent on reclaiming him. And so Jacob sends the brothers down, and Joseph has been there 22 years already, but the family is broken, and the missing piece, Joseph, the Shever, must be restored to the family in order to render it whole again. Jacob remembers Joseph, and he is intent on remembering him into the family in order to repair that brokenness. Jacob goes down to Egypt, and he's reunited with Joseph. And now, in chapter 48, he summons to his bedside Joseph and his two sons, born to him in Egypt, to a non-Israelite mother, who is the daughter of the high priest of On, the city of sun worship, some yichus. So in chapter 48, in a dramatic scene, Jacob is intent on blessing his Egyptian grandsons. But even more so, he will reclaim them and formally adopt them and reinstate them into Israelite tradition. They will become future tribes of Israel, Menashe and Ephraim. Now let's turn to chapter 48 if you want to follow me in the text. It's on page 294. Joseph has been in Egypt 22 years, and he's risen to power and greatness in Pharaoh's court. He's second in command. He strides the corridors of power. Pharaoh has conferred on him an Egyptian name. And let me clue you in. Conferring a name on a child in the Bible is the prerogative of the parent, the father. Secondly, Pharaoh has given him a wife, also the prerogative of a parent. And who is this wife? She's the daughter of the high priest of On, the city of sun worship. And the unspoken question looms here in the background. Is Pharaoh Joseph's new father? Let's do the chronology. Joseph is sold into slavery at age 17. He's been in Egypt 22 years. When Jacob comes down, that makes him 39. And now it's 17 years later. So Joseph is 56. He's not about to divorce his wife. He's not about to change his lifestyle. He is assimilated, okay? And Jacob summons Joseph to his bedside and his sons so that he can bless his grandsons before he dies. And suddenly, in the middle of the ceremony, this is in verse 8, Jacob interrupts himself and asks Joseph, "Mi ele? Who are these boys? Is this a senior moment? A memory lapse? A loss of concentration and focus?" No, he's challenging Joseph. "Who are these boys? Mi ele?" They're probably standing there in Egyptian designer clothing. They've gone to Little League for chariot racing. Who are they? Are they my grandsons, or are they the grandsons of the high priest of On? Are they Israelite, or are they Egyptian? Are they descended from Abraham and Isaac, or are they Egyptian? Jacob then peremptorily continues and adopts them. And in verse 8, as he's about to confer his blessing on the boys, Jacob's name is suddenly switched in the text from Yaakov to Yisrael. Spoiler alert, this is the Afikoman. What's going on here? Now, Jacob got a new name when he fought with that nocturnal adversary, and his name was changed there to Israel, and it meant strength. But as the text of the Bible continues, the name that's used for him is still Jacob. But here the name change is different. More importantly, in our text, the name change from Jacob to Israel marks the birth of the nation of Israel, right here. Ephraim and Manasseh are to become two future tribes of the nation of Israel, B'nai Israel. Jacob, the father of sons in Genesis, now morphs into Yisrael, the progenitor of the yet unborn Israelite nation. And in claiming his grandsons as his own, he's blessing them as he is vouchsafing the future of the nascent nation. And this is a significant turning point in Genesis and Israelite history. The Israelite nation, Yisrael, is born right here in the text. Look at the power of grandparent to chart the spiritual destiny of a grandchild. There are many of you who are grandparents. Think about that. I always like to comment that God hides messages for us to find in the text, kind of a literary aphikomen, and it's waiting for us to uncover the hidden meaning. Jacob mentions Ephraim, the younger brother, before Menashe, the older brother. Why? Because Menashe means forgetfulness. Joseph, in naming him, declared his desire to forget his Israelite roots and his forebears, Abraham and Isaac. He emphatically renounces his Israelite roots. And so what Jacob is doing here is recognizing that and saying, I can't give preference to one who is the embodiment of forgetfulness, whose name symbolizes the denial of one's family tradition. And the future Israelite nation, if you recall, will live by the principle of Zachor. Zachor et Yom HaShabbat. Zachor et Amalek. Zachor, remember that you were slaves in Egypt. And now for the first time in the Genesis text, brothers won't compete for the blessing. Instead, they're going to share a blessing. They're blessed together. Jacob, who stole the blessing of the firstborn from Esau, his brother, is now resolving sibling rivalry and the hierarchy in Genesis. Brothers can share a blessing, and he blesses the boys together. Primogeniture is no longer the harbinger of bloodshed. In the blessing that he's about to confer on them, he reverses the birth order, Ephraim and Menashe. I want you to read the blessing with me. It's on page 296. Yisimcha Elohim ke Ephraim en uke Menashe. Does that blessing sound familiar to you? When do we say it? Shabbat? It's the blessing we confer on our children and or grandchildren every Friday night. Here's the core question. If these boys are assimilated, they're born to a non-Israelite mother, what's the point of blessing our children or grandchildren every Friday night? May you be like Ephraim and Menashe, assimilated. Born to an Egyptian mother, not an Israelite. Really? What is the message here? That you can bring a Jew back at any time. You can bring a Jew back at any time. Think of the power of a grandparent here, grandfather, to bring a grandchild back to the tradition, back to Judaism at any stage. Create for them the spiritual environment and the state of blessing for them to grow as Jews, live as Jews, thrive as Jews. And if you're a grandparent, think of your power to create memory, to create meaning. Only twice in all of Scripture do we encounter scenes of grandfathers and grandchildren. And it's here in the context of blessing, here in Vayichi. We have the scene of Jacob blessing his grandsons, and then at the end of the parsha, Joseph blesses his grandsons. There's a kind of literary inclusio and a bracketing here. We have Joseph and his grandsons, and the joy he experiences as a grandfather, and Jacob and his grandsons. We never see Abraham interacting or blessing his grandchildren. We never see Isaac interacting or blessing his grandchildren. Vayechi is testament to the power of the grandfather to vouchsafe life and to generate life. I want to share a story with you about one of my Meir students and how this blessing changed his life. Meir orientation, we all sit around the table, those of you who've taken Meir with me, and each and every one introduces himself or herself and says why they're taking Meir. And one of my students, who was a gentleman in his 60s, told the group that he was Irish and a deacon in his church. And why is he taking Meir? Well, because I had a Jewish grandfather and I'd like to learn something about his religion and his tradition. I taught this chapter as the conclusion of a unit on patriarchy, And my student came up to me at the end of the class, and he was weeping. Tears were rolling down his cheeks. The text had clearly touched the heart, his heart, to the core. "What happened?" I asked him. And he said to me, "I now know why I'm taking Mayo. My Jewish grandfather is bringing me back. My Jewish grandfather is bringing me back." You can bring a Jew back at any time. Weeping enabled my Maya student to translate the ancient Hebrew text into the language of the heart. The Torah text had clearly touched his heart to the core, and the memory of his Jewish grandfather called to him as it was forged in the smithy of his soul. To be sure, there's an emotional component to adult learning, in addition to the intellectual engagement. And several years ago, a fascinating article by Harvard Divinity School professor Kimberly Patton appeared in the Journal of the American Academy of Religion. And in it, she demonstrated how tapping into the emotions with the resulting weeping on part of the students intensifies the learning process and enables students to grasp the subject on a multidimensional level. Education is a matter of mind and heart. But it's also fascinating that Joseph weeps. I had a Bible professor years ago who said, Joseph's a crybaby. No. There's meaning to his weeping. And in the final chapters of Genesis that we're reading now, he weeps several times when he reunites with his father, Jacob, when he reunites with his brothers, and particularly when he reunites with Benjamin. Joseph's weeping adds another dimension of meaning to the weeping of my Maya student. I want to share with you a brilliant insight from Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein of blessed memory, the great Talmud scholar and the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Har Etzion in Israel, who also held a PhD in literature and philosophy from Harvard, all my Harvard graduates here. And he would often illustrate how his study of world literature broadened his spiritual horizons. For Rabbi Lichtenstein, the literary key to understanding Joseph can be found in his tears. The weeping provides an insight into the struggle that surges in Joseph's soul. Joseph is waging a battle with himself, his past, his present, and his future. And the weeping and attendant sudden surge of emotions, according to Rabbi Lichtenstein, represent an internal quarrel about who he is and who he is called to be. Weeping is a genuine battle of identity. Just as Jacob questioned me, Ayla, who are these boys? So Joseph, in questioning himself, me ani, who am I? For my Maya student, the weeping was an open manifestation of that battle within him, as he was brought to confront the question, who am I? What is the essence of my identity? Church deacon or Jew? What role did my grandfather play? Nationhood is defined here by grandparenthood. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, lovingly called the Rav here in Boston and founder of the Maimonides School, wrote, and I quote, "The moment of blessing captures the transmission of Israelite identity beyond one generation, and it therefore takes on national importance." Through blessing his grandsons, Jacob the grandfather becomes Yisrael, the father of a nation. We are not called Bnei Avraham. We are not called Bnei Yitzchak. We're called Bnei Yisrael. Could it be that this was because Avraham and Yitzchak never interacted with grandchildren? I want to go back to my original question. Why is the parsha called Vayechi, life? To be sure, Jacob the grandfather dies, but before his demise, Jacob morphs into Yisrael, the progenitor of the Jewish nation. And when he blesses his grandsons, in bringing his Egyptian grandsons back, reclaiming them, adopting them, Lehem, they're mine, and invoking the names of the patriarchs, Jacob is renamed in the text as Yisrael, because he is vouchsafing the future of the Jewish people, not just his family, the future of the Jewish nation for generations to come. Jacob changes the family dynamic as his name changes to Yisrael. And as Jacob morphs into Yisrael, a family is restored. But more importantly, a nation is born, Yisrael. Genesis ends with a new Genesis, the Genesis of nationhood. So we began with the notion of brokenness in the family. Jacob goes down to Egypt to find that shever, that broken piece in his family. And at the end of the parsha, he formally adopts his grandchildren. They are mine. He reclaims them. And we learn that it teaches us that you can bring a Jew back at any time. But then Jacob, the father, grandfather, dies. Does the event not gainsay the title of the parsha? Vayechi, life? No. To be sure, Jacob, the father, dies because he represents the past. But Yisrael lives because it represents the future, the nation of Israel. Israel is born at the end of Vayechi. Israel is the future. Genesis is renewed. We began when Jacob asserts that Yesh Shever B'Mitzrayim, there's a broken piece in Israel. The Hebrew language is complex, and one word, one root, can hold two opposite meanings. The grammatical term for this pair of words of opposite meaning is contronym. Contronym. On the one hand, we have Shever, a broken piece, or Mashber, the state of brokenness, the crisis of brokenness, the existential reality of the brokenness of Jacob's family. But the word Mashber has an alternate meaning, totally the opposite. It's a contronym. Mashber in Hebrew can also mean birthing stool. And the source for that is Isaiah 37 and the Zohar. The Mashber, the birthing stool, is the promise of new life. And as the parsha unfolds, we move from Mashber, the brokenness of the family, to reconciliation, repair, and the Mashber of rebirth. No more sibling rivalry. Brothers can share a blessing. Primogeniture is no longer of prime importance. Birth of a nation, Mashber. I would be remiss if I didn't ask the question, so how does all this shape our vision of Israel today? What message does Vayechi hold for us? For Israel. Israel, like Joseph, is that broken off piece from the world, a shever. In the Hebrew, Israel is in a state of mashber, brokenness, a crisis of brokenness. But as we have seen in Hebrew, one word can hold two very opposite meanings, the contronym. Vayechi is the final analysis, holds a message of hope. Yes, Jacob dies, he represents the past, but Jacob is renamed as Yisrael. He represents the future, the birth of a nation, Yisrael. Israel today is like Joseph, a shever, a broken piece, broken off from the rest of the world, the object of criticism and calumny. And certainly the situation that prevails is mashber, brokenness, on so many levels. Our job is to be like Jacob. Our job is to remember Israel back into the world scene as a status nation. And we must restore Israel through our actions, political action, our donation, and yes, join the Temple Emmanuel mission in February to harvest the crops that the farmers cannot harvest because they are on the battlefield. Speaking up and speaking out on behalf of Israel, then and only then can Mashber, the brokenness, be transformed into the contronym, Mashber, the birthing stool, the promise of a new life, renewed life. Parshat Vayechi bespeaks life, the hope for the future, Vayechi, life. The nation Israel, Yisrael, born at the end of Genesis, lives on. And the message of Vayechi is there is a reason for life to go on. Am Yisrael Chai. May we witness the transformation of Israel from Mashber, the brokenness it experiences now, to Mashber, the birthing stool. May Israel experience a burst of new life to be reborn even stronger and more resilient. Am Yisrael Chai.